Thank you very much, Ram. And
whoa, straight out of the gate.
I would like to thank both Kumar and
Ram for technical difficulties.
Oh, and do I have a defective ear?
You need to do more ear.
Yeah. Okay, well, if it keeps falling off, we'll...
You know, maybe I'll just try to speak loudly. How about that? Is that the... Oh, you're recording something.
Is there maybe a rubber band?
There's something with the...
Maybe just...
Okay. All right.
Maybe
you
can second it better.
We'll see shortly.
Okay, so maybe I can just have a better idea of how it's comparing over here. You can use the ear, maybe.
Actually, that would not.
Even this. No, I think try this if you don't mind. I thought that.
Oh,
that's
brilliant.
Better. Yeah.
Excellent.
Is that okay? Can you hear?
Send the mic.
Sorry, okay.
Is that going to fit you all right?
How's that? Try that. Hey, well, it's there. It's on. You want to check whether it's working?
Well, it's on. Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you, Kumar and Ram, for this wonderful opportunity and a truly lovely conference, at least so far. And I hope that this will stay perched. So what I'd like to do is give sort of an overview of a subject with a long history to it. And I'm going to start with Hilbert, ICM in Paris in 1900. And he had a list of 23 problems that he felt were fundamental for mathematics. And the seventh problem can be stated in the following way. So assume that alpha is different from 0 and 1, an algebraic. Beta is algebraic and irrational. And then Hilbert's problem was to prove that alpha raised to the power beta is transcendental. So the problem is to prove this. So I guess I should leave that as a question mark. And this set in line a really lovely sort of sequence of results. And the very first in this context is due to Gelfand from 1929, and he was able to resolve the seventh problem in the following situation. So he was able to prove that if alpha is different from 0 or 1, beta is irrational in an imaginary quadratic field. Then the appropriate conclusion holds that alpha to the power beta is transcendental. So this is a very promising first step. Gelfand, yeah. Actually, when I have anything typed, the typist absolutely hates it because they can't tell whether it's an O or an A, and my A's and O's are. I confuse myself even. Yeah, no. Okay, so that's Gelfond in 1929, and shortly thereafter, Kuzmin, ...1930, the same conclusion, beta, so alpha different from 0, 1, beta, real quadratic irrational. Alpha to the beta transcendental. Okay, so this is looking good, and in fact, as is well known, the next step was taken not that long afterwards, and it was done independently by Gelfond and by Schneider in 1934, and that was the general result. Alpha not equal to 0, 1, alpha algebraic, beta algebraic irrational, alpha to the beta transcendental. So, oh yeah, yes, absolutely. And the techniques that Gelfond and Schneider, the proofs that they gave, they appeared in the same year, but they were different arguments, but arguments that were in some sense dual, as Michel Waldschmidt has very carefully delineated. And they depended upon the construction of an auxiliary function, and then one looked at the orders of vanishing of this function. Okay, well, there's a natural generalization of this question, and that natural generalization was to several algebraic numbers, alpha 1 up to alpha n and beta 1 up to beta n, but it took a long time before it was established, and this was done by Baker in 1966, and his result was, so we take alpha 1 up to alpha n algebraic, different from 0 or 1, beta 1 up to beta n algebraic with 1 beta 1 beta n linearly independent over q, and then the conclusion is that, see, how are we going to do this? I guess what I'll do is just go straight onto this board. The conclusion is that alpha 1 to the beta 1 times etc. down to alpha n to the beta n is transcendental. So a very satisfactory result, generalization of the earlier results of Gelfond and Schneider. And the reason it took so long was that whereas the earlier works had basically looked at functions of a single variable, what Baker was able to do was extend the arguments to functions of several variables. This isn't the end of the story, of course. What one can do is ask, well, okay, if you know something is transcendental, you can ask, well, how close is it to being algebraic? And we'd like to measure that, and in order to measure something like that, we need a notion of height. And for my purposes today, it's enough to take the naive height of an algebraic number. So let alpha be algebraic. Uh,
The height, H alpha of alpha, is the the maximum of the absolute values. In the minimal polynomial, of alpha over maximum of the absolute values of, thank you, the coefficients in the minimal polynomial of alpha over Q. So we'll look at polynomial with integer coefficients and defined over Z with content 1. So of course, there are all sorts of other heights that one can use, but this is good enough to capture what we're interested in. And what one can do is sort of measure the how far such an expression is from being algebraic by means of the height function and various other quantities. In particular, what we can do is look at, well, I guess I need some notation here, so let alpha 1 up to alpha n not equal to 0, 1 be algebraic of heights A1 up to AN, respectively. Beta 1 up to beta N be algebraic of heights at most B. Let's put K equal to the field we get by adjoining alpha 1 up to alpha n and beta 1 up to beta n to Q, and suppose that the degree of K over Q is equal to D. Next, let's let lambda be, basically, if we just take the logarithm of that expression there, so beta 1 log alpha 1 plus beta n log alpha n. So if we think, if we're asking, is this transcendental? Well, if this was, how far is this quotient, let's say, if this was, imagine if you have this equal or close to an algebraic number, if you take the quotient and the logarithm, you're asking how small that could be. In other words, you'd like a, and we can forget about, we can just put this in terms of just the n logarithms we have here. We would like an estimate for this quantity lambda from below in terms of the information we have here. Okay, so let me go over to this board. A little bit of terminology. First of all, let's just assume the heights of the AIs are all at least 4, and similarly, this upper bound for the height B is at least 4. We're going to introduce this quantity omega, which is just the product of the logarithms of the heights. And now we get to sort of quantitative versions of these earlier results. The first, so a quantitative version here would be an assertion that if this quantity is not equal to 0, that then in fact we can bound it from below in terms of the data here. And the first result of that form was obtained by Gelfond in 1935 for the case of two logarithms. So this is shortly after the proof of the Gelfond-Schneider theorem. And I'm going to jump way ahead to sort of a refined version of this work due to Baker. So the results I'll state is from 1977, and it's due to Baker. And what he proved is that if lambda is not equal to 0, then lambda is bigger than, in absolute value, the exponential. I'll do it like this. I'll do it slightly differently. Bigger than B omega to the minus C times omega log omega dashed, where I have to tell you what log omega dashed is, and I have to tell you what C is, where omega dashed is just omega divided by log of AN. And the result that Baker established for C was 16 ND to the 200 N. Okay, so this gives a quantitative version of this result here. One's actually measuring with the information that's at hand how small that linear form and logarithm can be. Sure, yeah. But the best result, of course, would be, yeah, I haven't ordered them according to size, but the best result would be to take the biggest one. So sorry? Oh, D is the degree of K over Q. Okay. So now, of course, I'm skipping a huge amount of history to get to this point, but things haven't advanced enormously from this result. There's an obvious factor here that one would like to eliminate, and in fact, this was done by three people actually in 1988. So Philippon and Michel Waldschmidt. And had independently. Fustholz, we're able to remove the log omega dash factor with some modification to C. Let me put it like that. And the new idea was to this log omega dashed factor was coming from a the Coomer descent argument. One wasn't able to make it go through properly, and by introducing zero estimates for algebraic groups, so in the case of the paper of Philippon and Waldschmidt, they used zero estimates of Philippon, and Fustholz used his zero estimates, they were able to remove this factor of log omega dashed. Okay, so that's the state of affairs up to 88. There's a very... Sure. So that was what I was sort of briefly alluding to here, that if you suppose this was algebraic, right? But we may as well just do it here. So suppose this is equal to alpha n plus one, where alpha n plus one is algebraic. Well, then I could divide through and write it as alpha n plus one to the minus one over here equals one. Now, if I take the logarithm of this, I'm getting beta 1 log alpha 1 plus beta 2 log alpha 2, etc. And provided this expression is non-zero, then I've got something which is a measure of how far this is from being transcendent, being algebraic. So assuming it's algebraic, assume it's algebraic, and then you would have But in fact, the alpha that corresponds to the n equals 2 case of linear forms and logarithms, which was accessible to Gelfand and Schneider. But that's the sort of notion. That's the idea. Now there's a very interesting special case of this of results of this. Of this sort, and that's the special case when in fact things are not transcendental. That's the case when beta 1 up to beta n are in fact rational integers. And that's known as the rational case. And let's just see here, where should we go? So here we're outside of the realm of, or the domain of transcendence, but we're still within the same, I mean, this argument is motivated by the considerations that were used to prove results on transcendence. So in particular, if beta 1 up to beta n are rational, numbers are indeed clearing denominators, rational integers. Then we're in the rational case. And in fact, it's this rational case that has had just an extraordinary number of applications, in particular to things like, this has been used in the study of Diophantine equations. So in particular, things like Catalan's equation or the Tui equation. And it's also been applied for studying properties of integers with prescribed prime divisors and a host of other things. In this case, we can do slightly better. And let me just state for you the state of the art as we know it now. So the best result is a result of Matveyev he has two papers, 1998 and 2000. So we're in the rational case. So if, let me put it like this. It's a rational case. There exists positive number C naught, which is in fact effectively computable, such that if lambda is not equal to zero, then the absolute value of lambda is bigger than e to the minus c naught to the n, d to the n plus 3 will do, let's write it like this, omega log b. Now, I should mention that with respect to the dependence on B, this result is best possible. With respect to the dependence on any of the A's, the result is best possible. But that doesn't mean that, in fact, the result is best possible with respect to all the parameters at once. And in fact, we would expect that omega could be replaced by the logarithm of the maximum of the heights. And certainly this would follow from a conjecture of Lange-Waldschmidt, for instance. This result of Matveyev was really a revelation for me. His big contribution here, I mean, you can see that what we're doing is basically sharpening the most significant aspect of this is the sharpening the dependence on the parameter n. So his real sort of step forward was to replace the factor of n to the n here by the factor of c naught to the n. And if you think about it, of course, the omega here is a product over n terms, so you expect at least exponential growth. And it was really surprising that he was able to refine the methods and get down to something like constant to the n. His argument was quite detailed and maybe not the easiest to follow, and subsequently Nestorienko gave a very nice treatment in the special case that alpha 1 up to alpha n are in fact in Q. And that sort of indicated clearly the ideas that were behind Matveyev's argument. Okay, so basically in terms then of the just take the, instead of beta 1 up to beta n being arbitrary algebraic numbers, let's fix them in Q, beta 1 up to beta n in Q.
No.
Just the betas. So, yeah.
Are there conjectures about what the optimal result should be when all the alphas and the betas are rational numbers?
Well, yes, in fact. This is the conjecture of Lang and Waldschmidt that I alluded to earlier. But I mean, it's the same, and it's basically based on a pigeonhole principle argument, the best that one could hope for, essentially. And in that case, I would have to do the argument. It's certainly the factor of n would be just linear in n, yeah. Some of the logarithms, yeah. So, but the sum, yeah. So this is the state of affairs with respect to complex linear forms and logarithms. But one can also view this subject chaotically, and what I'd like to do is just give you an overview of what's happened chaotically, because it's a very similar sort of situation, but there are attendant difficulties. So, well, we can go all the way back to, I mean, essentially the subject was put on its feet by Mahler in the 30s, actually early 20s and 30s, and he introduced the notion of a normal p-adic function. And proved the, let's say, an analog of Gelfand-Schneider. Gelfand-Schneider, and this was 35. And just as in the complex case, one can look at p-adic linear forms in two logarithms. And this is something Gelfand managed to do in 1939. It was subsequently sort of estimates for linear forms in two logarithms were subsequently refined by Schintzel in the 60s, and then Baker and Coates using the new ideas that Baker had brought to the subject. In fact, so I'm not going to tell you the precise form of the linear forms in estimates for linear forms in two logarithms, but just as we had this sort of explosion of activity following sort of Baker's fundamental step in going from 2 to n logarithms, similarly there was a lot of activity generalizing that to p-adic linear forms in n logarithms. So let me just say n logarithms. So there was work by Broomer, Coates, Sprinjuk, Kaufman, and Van der Porten. And let me just mention a result that Alf obtained in 77, I guess it was. Well, I have to introduce a bit more terminology here, so bear with me. So suppose that P is the prime. And let alpha 1 up to alpha n be algebraic numbers. Not all zero. And let's put k equal q with alpha 1 up to alpha n adjoined. So, just as before, degree of k over q is d. What do we need? Let's let b1 up to bn. So, I'm going to state the result that corresponds to the rational case. So, b1 up to bn be rational integers. Integers, of course, with bn not congruent to 0 mod p. Okay, so now let's look at, let's focus on our prime p. So let p be prime ideal of the ring of algebraic integers of K lying above P. Let's let EP denote the ramification index, the index of ramification. And let FP denote the residue field degree. So in other words, just the norm of P norm K to Q of P is P to the
FP. Okay, so now I need, now Alf needed to impose a restriction on the, there's a technical issue here, and that's, we introduce the following quantity. G of P is equal to, what, it's the integer part of a half plus E of P over P minus 1. And now that we've got this G of P, which of course is going to be small if E of P, the index of ramification is small and P is big, that'll just be 0. Put G of P equal to, okay, so we want P to the power, to the power little gp, times the norm of P minus 1. So our P to the FP minus 1. And finally, we're in a position to, one other point. So for any alpha K star, let ord P alpha be the order of P in the fractional ideal generated by alpha. So now we're in a position to state van der Poorten's theorem. Okay, so what he looked at is, so I'm stating this in terms of the order, so it'll look like the exponential of what we had before. So if alpha 1 to the b1, alpha n to the bn is different from 1, then the p-adic order of this power product minus 1, alpha 1 to the b1 down to alpha n to the bn minus 1. So this is the lambda not equal to 0 condition, and now the conclusion is that we get a bound from above on the order to which that prime ideal p can divide an expression of this form, and the bound is of the form, well, let's see, it'll be say C G of P omega log omega dashed times log B, and he was able to get a C with C of the form 16 nd the power 12 to the power n plus 1. Well, this was a very satisfactory result, and the argument, but the argument turns out that there was, so he sort of captured
what had been done up until that point in the case of ordinary linear forms and logarithms. This is the sort of corresponding analog with actually a better constant here. Of course, here one has interceding this expression g of p, which involves the prime p and the way it ramifies, etc. But it turns out that there was a subtle error in the Coomer descent part of the argument that Alf used, and it was structurally one just couldn't make the induction go through. So there was a problem, and this is something that Kunrui Yu undertook to put right, to get around this difficulty, and in a really monumental series of papers, he was able to do it sort of incrementally. He was able to finally get beyond the obstacles that this problem in the Coomer theory was posing. And incidentally, the Coomer theory was brought into the subject by Stark, and then Stark and Baker used it very effectively, and it's been sort of efficiently used ever since. It's sort of become a basic part of the theory.
Now, Coomer theory enters only if these alpha i's are algebraic numbers, but if they're rational numbers, that means that would that be okay?
No.
If the alpha i's are rational numbers,
no. No.
It's okay, but it was valid.
No. So this really was a serious... It was subtle, but it was a serious issue, and Kunrui Yu really had to work enormously hard to get around it. He was able to do so to a certain extent. He was able to essentially bypass the difficulty, and in addition, bring in the ideas from zero estimates that corresponded to the removal of that log omega dash term, which Philippon and Waldschmidt and Buszholz did. And let me just state a result of his. Let's see, so this is a result of his from 2007, and in order to make the Coomer theory work, well, there's a certain prime that's chosen in the descent, and okay, so what was it that he had to introduce? Right, so this is now the work of Kunrui Yu. 2007, and this was a 94-page paper, so it was a substantial amount of work. He did the following. So we'll assume we have the setup that we had before for Alf, and we'll make this assumption. He needed to assume that Zeta 3 actually was in his field K if P is equal to 2, and that, so this is e to the 2 pi I over 3, and Zeta 4, or I could just write it as I, is in K if P is greater than 2 and the p-adic order P to the F P minus 1 is different from 1. So this is a bit of an irritation, but let's make that assumption. He also needed to He needed the following. He needed to introduce, let's see. So, suppose we're going to define the, we're going to look at the p-adic order of an expression like that. So let's suppose that the p-adic order of alpha 1, or alpha I is equal to 0. No, I mean just take a prime, which take the rational field, take p equal 5, then how do I want to put that? Let's see. I guess it's just a, there we go. Yeah, that did look very strange. Much better, yeah. That's better now, right? Yeah. So in particular, so this is a 2 here. So in particular, if your prime was 5, then you would have to adjoin I to your field, and then consequently in your, well, I haven't stated the estimate, but the estimate will be worse. Okay, so suppose that the p-adic order is 0 for I equals 1 to n. And we also need something that corresponds to this little gp. And what was it that... right. Define kappa by the following inequalities involving... So this would be, again, something involving ep. So we want what? P to the k minus 1 times p minus, p to the kappa minus 1, excuse me, times p minus 1. Now. Sorry? Yeah? What that means is that you have to increase the degree, because of course the result will still be true for that bigger field. You just apply it with k. I mean, I haven't stated the result, but I'm going to. And just increase the degree of the field in which you're working. You'll have to calculate the parameters like FP, etc., in that larger field. No, but it will increase the dependence on the degree and on the it'll affect the ramification, the FP and the EP.
Let's
see. So at this stage, that's fine. But I guess when we're... I see exactly the concern. So the way I stated it was fine, but the way I'm going to... Sir? No, we don't need to increase n by 1. Also, in fact, we could, because I'm not... I'm going to state this as just an arbitrary constant, so I could do that. I won't specify the constant, not arbitrary, I won't specify the constant. But the way it's stated here is absolutely fine. But now, what you might say here is, well, wait a second, I can't just assume zeta 3 is in k when I've called k to be this. What I really mean is that, so saying that, assume that zeta 3 is in k, is equivalent to saying that k is equal to q. This is just shorthand for this. Okay? And sure. Yeah, did I not say? Yeah, B's an upper bound, so it's okay. And A also. So no, we're okay there. But yeah, I should. So saying this was, which is shorthand for just to join that. Okay, and similarly down here. Now let's do it like this. Define kappa to be the smallest positive integer. Smallest integer. Smallest non-negative. There, get it eventually. Non-negative integer for which we want to have EP bounded, twice EP bounded from above by P to the kappa, that's a kappa, and times P minus 1. So actually this is strict. It's P minus 1. Okay, so that's kappa. Okay, so what is it that we've got here finally? Right, so what Connery proves is that there exists some C1 bigger than zero such that if alpha 1 to the B1, etc., down to alpha n to the Bn is not equal to 1, then the p-adic order alpha 1 to the B1, alpha n to the Bn, minus 1, is bounded from above by, okay, C1 p to the kappa to the n, C1 p to the kappa to the n. That's the first term. Then we have to have the ramification, the residue class degree in here. This corresponds to that norm of P that we saw in the result of the GP and van der Porten's work. And then D to the N plus 4 omega log B. Right. So now if EP is small, then in fact we can take kappa to be zero, in which case we can sort of suppress this term. But the key, let's just look at the salient features here. The key thing is we've got something which is exponential in n, corresponding to Matveyev. We have this factor, we have the familiar d to the, essentially d to the n, and then omega log b, again, corresponding to the result of Matveyev over there. Okay, so this is a very satisfactory state of affairs. You might ask, well, why is it that it seems to be so much more difficult to prove a result like this than in the case of ordinary logarithms? And basically, the problem is that one wants to look at expressions, say, of the form alpha times gamma z, or which we'd like to look at functions, say, f z, but we want these functions to be defined in omega p, so take q, look at a completion of Q with respect to the p-adic absolute value, so you get QP, take an algebraic closure, that's not complete, and now take the completion of that, and luckily we stop. So that's the analog of C that one wants to work in. And So let's call it CP. And this you want to view as the p-adic exponential function times, gamma log p alpha z. So we'd like to view these now as functions in CP, and we no longer have, if we want our exponential function to be defined as it is initially by a power series, like we define the standard exponential function for, and similarly for the logarithm, then we have difficulties because the radius of convergence is different. We're forced into a much tighter range, and really that's the source of basically the difficulties in passing to the p-adic case. And this is why one sees things like the introduction of this factor p to the fp. Okay, so what can we, our time is running down. What can we do? Is this the end of the story? I mean, it looks like it's sort of the end of the story, but basically this p to the fp is a very irritating beast. Certainly in Kunri and I have a paper where we look at the ABC conjecture, and what one can do in the complex with complex linear basically depends on putting together information from both complex and p-adic linear forms and logarithms, and the obstruction to progress at the moment is the dependence on this factor p to the fp. Now, there's also an issue with the Kummer theory as well, that's forcing one to add the zeta 4 to the field K. Now, I've been able to come up with a modification of the Kummer theory argument that allows the argument basically that van der Poorten had, or in fact the argument of Kunrui, to go through much more smoothly, and it allows one to basically get rid of this condition. And in addition, so Kunrui has put it into his machinery here, and we're able to, he's able to make a refinement of this result here, and let me just mention where the refinement is coming. First of all, this condition is avoided, and secondly, the dependence on this p to the fp factor for a certain range of n, one can improve on it. And in fact, this development actually leads to some surprising new applications. It's sort of right at the limit of the method. It seemed that in fact p to the fp is sort of a natural object that one's forced to introduce here, but one can win a factor. Maybe the best thing I can do is just write down essentially what can be, since we're out of time, I don't want to state things in. In their full glory, but let me just mention that, so I'm going to make a bunch of preliminary assumptions. If one assumes that the prime, say, is bigger than 5, if we assume that alpha 1 up to alpha n are multiplicatively independent p-adic units, then essentially one can replace this p to the fp factor by a maximum of two factors. It's a p to the fp as before, but now we win in certain cases. And the other thing is something of this form. Okay, well, this actually looks like it will be worse, but in fact, I can state this as a, we either have a result of this form. I can put a min over my max of this and something else, but the interesting point is precisely here. Here, we're actually going to do better than p to the fp for n small relative to fp log p. So if you think about n about log p over log p size, then in fact this will be considerably smaller than p to the fp, and this factor also will be smaller. And it's sort of that, it's that critical part that allows one to obtain new applications. Now, I've already trespassed on my time, so I will stop here.